All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's reached the point in our meeting where it's time for our public hearings. We're very glad that you're with us this evening, giving up your Thursday evening to participate in your planning and zoning process. Please let me assure you that anyone who wishes to speak on a given application will be given the opportunity to do so at the appropriate time and in accordance with the rules of the commission. And speaking of the rules of the commission, please allow me to direct your attention to our esteemed counsel to my right and your left, who has a few well-chosen words to share with you about the way that we conduct our meetings and the way we would like you to conduct yourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the time for the public hearing scheduled before the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission is shown on today's agenda, or tonight's agenda. These proceedings are conducted under the rules of the Planning and Zoning Commission. The proceedings are being broadcast on the internet at sussexcountyde.gov. There is a 30-second delay between what occurs live in this room and what is broadcast on the internet. All commission matters are discussed and voted on publicly in open meetings. Everyone present and everyone participating virtually is invited to stay throughout the commission meetings to view the commission's deliberations and the votes on the pending applications. Everyone in attendance or participating virtually must conduct themselves in an orderly fashion, and no applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. Please do not distract from these proceedings, and we ask that you follow the directions of the chairman. For those of us here in this room, if you have a telephone or similar device, we ask that you turn it off or switch it to silent service. The hearings will be conducted as follows. First, the application will be announced by the chairman, and then the director will review the application and describe any agency comments or correspondence that has been received. Then the applicant will present and explain its application to the commission, and the applicant may present any exhibits and testimony in support of the application. The commission may question the applicant and its witnesses at any time. After the applicant's presentation, the chairman will invite public comment. For testimony from people here in this room, supporters will go first, followed by any opponents. If there is a spokesperson or an attorney representing an organized group, we ask that they identify themselves so that they can speak first. We will start with folks present in this room, and then we will ask to hear from people participating remotely through the call-in number. Because there is a 30-second delay, we will pause the hearing to allow the internet broadcast to catch up for people watching online and for wanting to participate by phone. For those of you here on the premises who wish to speak, we ask that you come to the podium and identify yourself by name and place of residence for the record. We just need the name and place of residence from anyone speaking on the phone. We do ask that you be concise in your statements and avoid being repetitious. The chairman has the authority to set reasonable time limits on testimony from the applicant and the audience, and he has the authority to terminate testimony from anyone when that testimony is irrelevant or unduly repetitive. No direct questioning or cross-examination of the applicant, supporters, or opponents will be permitted. Any questions should be directed to the commission, and the commission will direct the question to the appropriate person if necessary. Finally, Sussex County and its zoning and land use decisions does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, source of income, handicap or disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Public comments made on the basis of bias or stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into account by Sussex County in its deliberations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir, we thank you. Our first public hearing is subdivision 2021-29, Deer Creek.
Thank you. This is a standard subdivision to divide 93.582 acres plus or minus into 79 single family lots to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County. The property is lying on the north side of Statenville Road, which is Sussex County Route 224, at the northwest corner of the intersection of Statenville Road and DuPont Boulevard, which is Route 113. The tax parcel ID is District 230, Map 19, Parcel 27.00, and the zoning district is AR1, Agricultural Residential District. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the applicant's preliminary subdivision plan, we have a copy of the applicant's exhibit booklet, a copy of the applicant's soils report, we have a copy of the staff review letter, we have a copy of the plus comments and the applicant's response to those plus comments, we have a copy of the DelDOT memo, we have a copy of draft restrictive covenants and HOA documents for the proposed subdivision, we have a copy of a letter received from the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utilities Planning Division. We also have a copy of the applicant's Chapter 99-9C response, and we also have the TAC comments, including a letter from the USDA, a letter from the Division of Waste and Hazardous Substances, and a copy of a letter from the Office of the State Fire Marshal. I would note that we have received one letter in opposition, which was received after publication of the packet last week and has been circulated on your desks, and one mail return. Thank you.
Okay, sir, we thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Hutt.
Good evening. Thank you, Chairman Wheatley, members of the Planning Commission, staff, and council. For the record, my name is David Hutt, local attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James. This evening, I am representing Cromer Management LLC, which is the applicant for the application that was just introduced by Mr. Whitehouse, as well as being the owner of the property. With me this evening to assist as necessary with the application is Wes Cromer, principal of Cromer Management LLC, and sitting next to him is Jim Lober, a professional engineer with Kircher Engineering, which is now a Mott McDonald company. This project is a little unique in that it is a standard subdivision and consists of more than five or six lots, so it's a larger standard subdivision, which is something that I don't believe this Planning Commission sees on too frequent of a basis, because what that indicates is that there's going to be three-quarter acre lots with on-site wells and on-site wastewater treatment disposal systems for each of the proposed 79 lots. In some respects, this simplifies the Planning Commission's consideration. And the reason for that is, of course, is because since it's not a cluster subdivision, there are no superior design requirements. So the question is not a comparison regarding superiority. The question is compliance with Chapter 99 of the Sussex County Code, which, of course, as the Planning Commission knows, is the subdivision code. The good news for the Planning Commission and the applicant is that the Planning Commission has already answered the question as to whether or not this application meets the provisions of Chapter 99C by having considered this application once before. The application was then went by the same name, Deer Creek, and the subdivision application number was 2005-62, and it was granted preliminary approval by the Planning Commission on August 24th of 2006. And then final site plan approval on April 14th, 2010. Because of the downturn of the economy and other items, the subdivision did not get built. And of course, as you know through the process, a subdivision that doesn't get built within the time period set forth in the code sunsets or becomes void, and a notice is placed of record with recorder of deeds indicating as such. With respect to the property itself, the property is located on Statenville Road and basically right at the intersection of Statenville Road with Route 113. I think if you look at the legal description, it's 80 feet away from the intersection of Route 113. And you can see on the screens around the room the proximity of the property to 113, which runs up and down on the property or on the page as you can see it. Statenville Road starts at the bottom left-hand corner and runs this way. And yes, I always seem to find these, but this is a good Sussex County intersection because as Statenville Road crosses Route 113, it becomes Fleetown Road. So it changes its name as it crosses. If you actually were to be headed south on Route 113 and turn onto Statenville Road, one of the first things you would notice, or at least one of the first things I noticed, was the large tower with a white dome ball on top of that tower. And I'm not a scientist, but I believe that's a radar dome for weather tracking that they have. But that's one of the most significant features when you first turn off of Route 113. In 2005, when the Carlisle family presented this application to the Planning Commission, they described how the soils are very sandy and not ideal for farming, which is one of the reasons that they sought approval of the subdivision at that time. If you were to go to Sussex County's website and do some of the various layers that Mr. Whitehouse and his staff have added to the webpage, one of those layers is the subdivision layer, and it shades the subdivisions in the area in a light blue color, and that's what this rendering on the screens is. There are a number of standard subdivisions, as is proposed with this subdivision, including Hudson Pond Acres, Hudson Mill, and Sussex Woods, just north of here, situated on both sides of Route 113. And you can see that because this was a prior subdivision, it's actually shown as being the Deer Creek subdivision, and that's just a remnant from its prior approval. And if the applicant is successful this evening, then that designation on that map would still be a correct designation. The property itself consists of a little more than 93 and a half acres. It is zoned AR1 and is shown as being within the low density area on the 2045 future land use map, and is also shown as being in a level 4 area on the state strategies map. In preparing for tonight's hearing, I reviewed the file from that 2005 subdivision application, and this next rendering is one of the documents from the 2005 application. And the good news is that the application this evening is the exact same application. It's the same 79 lots on the same 93 and a half acres. This next slide shows the recorded final site plan. You can see the recording information is highlighted in the upper middle portion of this. As I indicated, their final site plan approval was granted in 2010 for this, and then it was recorded with the Recorder of Deeds. All of the lots in this proposed community meet the 3/4 acre minimum size requirement found in Chapter 99, and all of the lots are intended for single-family detached homes, of course. With the 79 lots that are proposed for the project, the resulting density from that is less than 1 unit to the acre. More specifically, it's 0.84 units to the acre. This density is consistent with the property's designation on the future land use map as a low density area, and also consistent with the general neighborhood of the area and those other subdivisions that we looked at along Route 113. Of course, not only is that density consistent with those planning tools, the future land use map, and the zoning code, but the project itself complements the existing character of the site. As you can see, the homes are in the central portion, and if we go back and look at the site itself, you can see that the wooded areas are along the perimeter of the site, and there's an agricultural field with what is obvious to all of you as Sussex County residents is a central pivot irrigation system that created that crop circle on the ground. The lots comprise a total of 62 acres of the site. There are approximately 7.8 acres of right-of-way within the streets and roads. There are 17 acres of non-tidal wetlands, and you can see they largely surround the property. And there are also 5.6 acres of open space or stormwater management that is proposed for the site. The reference that I just mentioned and highlighted along the outside of the property are non-tidal wetlands, and they create a significant buffer to the adjacent properties and uses in the area, and they fulfill the function of meeting the 20-foot forested or landscape buffer that's required in Chapter 99. As was indicated when Mr. Whitehouse read the elements that were filed or found within his file, rather, the Delaware Forest Service did review the plan for compliance with a forested buffer requirement, and there is a positive letter from them confirming that. One of the good news for any of the adjacent property owners is, of course, that this buffer exists. This isn't a buffer in a subdivision that somebody's going to plant, and I know the Planning Commission hears on a regular basis that it will be years before the buffer actually functions like a buffer. And in this case, of course, with the depth of these woods that surround the property, that buffer is already existing and will function as a buffer is intended to function. Just as in the final site plan that was approved before, there are no wetlands located with any of the 79 lots. With respect to traffic, DLDOT was asked to comment on this at various stages through the TAC process, through the PLUS process, and there's a memo that was referenced by Mr. Whitehouse a moment ago indicating that the warrants are met for the project to pay the area-wide study fee. In addition, if you look at that April 1st, 2022 memo from DLDOT, you'll see that in addition to documenting the area-wide study fee, it also provides for all of the additional off-site improvements that will be required by the applicant, which is essentially the improvement of Statenville Road along the projected frontage for the entirety of the project. There are no sidewalks that are proposed within this subdivision because it would be out of character with the rural nature of this area and the large nature of the lots. In addition, there are no active amenities planned for the project. The larger lots allow for individuals to construct and participate in their own activities and amenities on their own property. And again, this is more typical of the subdivisions on the central or western side of the county, and is different, of course, than the coastal subdivisions that the Planning Commission sees on a regular basis, where people are looking for smaller lots, low to no maintenance, and a lot of amenities to be provided for them. Again, this is a different type of market, which is why it was proposed then and now in that fashion. This also results in very low homeowner association dues for individuals because there are not those active amenities that have to be maintained. The Property Owners Association is essentially the 79 unit owners are working to maintain the streets and the stormwater management, as well as, of course, the landscape buffer. The items listed in Chapter 99-9C of the subdivision ordinance have been addressed in both the materials that were provided, as well as hopefully any questions that remain this evening. I'm going to go through several of them quickly. First, the subdivision will certainly be integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape, particularly with the use of the existing perimeter forested wetland as a buffer. Secondly, there will be no use of wetlands as no lots will contain any wetlands, and the property is not in a floodplain as it is in Zone X, which, as the Commission knows, is an area determined to be outside the 500-year floodplain. There are no significant historical natural features found on the site. And the scenic part of this property is that perimeter forested area, and as you can see from the site plan, that is proposed to be preserved. There's going to be, the developer will also be minimizing the amount of tree and vegetation removal because that perimeter that exists, wooded perimeter, will remain. In addition, it is anticipated that the grade changes will be very minimal on the site, as the only grade changes will be whatever is necessary to get positive drainage to the stormwater management features on the site. The Chapter 99 then talks about the screening of objectionable features, which is objectionable features includes other homes as well as stormwater ponds. And as you can see, that robust buffer exists around the perimeter. And so that will help to screen all of those features from adjacent properties. The project will be served by on-site wells and on-site septic systems that will be designed and constructed according to state standards. With respect to that, in the materials, there was a copy of the original soil feasibility study for the 2005 project that was prepared by Coastal Soil Consultants. Recognizing that a significant amount of time has gone by since that soil feasibility study was conducted, the applicant did ask Coastal Soil to return to the site, and there is a report, an October 2021 report in the materials indicating that Coastal Soil's return to the site conducted numerous random soil borings and confirmed that the soils meet current regulatory requirements. Through the establishment of a stormwater management plan and working with the Sussex Conservation District, pollution of surface and groundwater will be minimized for the first time in the known history of this property. There will actually be stormwater management on the site. And of course, the developer will install those items, and then the Property Owners Association that I mentioned a moment ago will carry forward and maintain those items in perpetuity. Part of the site is within an excellent recharge area, and as the Commission knows, that means there are requirements in Chapter 89 that will be met, and those requirements will be met by the applicant. Primarily, as you know, those additional requirements occur when more than 35% of the site will become impervious, and it's not anticipated, given the broad nature of these lots, that situation would arise. With respect to traffic, we already commented on DLDOT's comments. In addition, of course, the entrance will receive a new approval from DLDOT, which will provide for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and onto Statenville Road. Area property values will not be decreased, and in fact, it's likely that they would be increased with the addition of this project to Statenville Road. The project is within the Milford School District, and a bus stop with a shelter is proposed to be located right at this initial intersection when you drive into the community. As you can see, that was part of the requirements for the original approval, and the new site plan, of course, has that bus shelter and bus stop in the exact same location with the four required parking places from the 2005 approval. As was shown earlier, the project will be compatible with the other area uses in the area, including the residential unit uses in the vicinity right along Route 113. And finally, the project will not adversely affect area waterways because there will be surface and stormwater management plans that will provide for the containment and treatment of it on site and for the management of that in perpetuity moving forward through the Property Owners Association. All of that is identical to what was previously approved for this property. One thing I did want to address separately is yeah, as you looked at the project books and the materials, you likely saw that there was a waiver request for the forested landscape buffer. And I was not involved with the initial filing of this application, but after reviewing the preliminary plan and then discussing this further with Mr. Robinson, it was determined that there would not be a waiver that was needed. If you look at that waiver request, it talks about both a 20-foot forested landscape buffer and a 30-foot forested landscape buffer. And of course, the 20-foot applies to a standard subdivision, which is what this is, and the 30-foot one that it was trying to meet would have applied if this were a cluster subdivision, which it is not. And the one location where the property can still, or does not show on this site plan as meeting that requirement is Lot 6. You can see that the property boundary or border comes to within almost 8 feet of the property boundary. But due to the size of this lot, there is room to move the lot line in and expand that 20-foot forested landscape buffer, the additional 12 feet, so that no waiver would be required on that lot or for any other portion of the community. And as you can see, in most locations, that forested buffer well exceeds the 20 feet. And again, that's just part of that perimeter of trees that will remain on the site.
Just to verify, while Mr. Hutt's shuffling through some papers, he and I did talk about that. We looked at the map, and I think one of the original questions apparently was with that letter is whether you could count the wetlands area as the buffer, which we have historically allowed, just like Mr. Hutt said, because you have that existing vegetation in there. It's forested wetlands. That's what you want in a buffer, is forest land. So it accomplishes that goal. So there's not the need for the waiver for that. And you're obviously not going to go in there and plant stuff when there's already vegetation there. So we don't need to worry about that. And then I talked to Mr. Whitehouse just to verify that there wasn't any waiver needed for the front portion of the property either. So they're good, subject to that one revision to the lot that Mr.
To Lot 6.
Yeah, Lot 6.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Robertson filibustering for me while I shuffled my papers. In conclusion, the project is a low-density project. It's certainly well-buffered from surrounding properties. The design meets the requirements of the comprehensive plan. It meets the requirements of the zoning code, and particularly meets the requirements of Chapter 99, the county's subdivision ordinance. In a moment, I'm going to hand to Mr. Robertson and Mr. Whitehouse some proposed findings and conditions. And the proposed conditions are consistent with the ones from the 2005 subdivision, although I would note that they're a lot more robust. The Planning Commission has many more items and elements of approvals today, by today's standards, than it did in 2005. So they are there are no changes other than additions that were made to them, which are typical additions for subdivision approval conditions that come from the Planning Commission. I did want to highlight four things quickly. One is that school bus stop that I mentioned, that condition is carried forward in the proposed conditions. In addition, there was concern I referenced in the prior application with regard to the fact that there are a number of large properties that surround this, and there are hunting activities that take place on those properties. And so a notice would be placed in the restrictive covenants, putting everybody on notice that there are hunting activities that occur in this area. And of course, those conditions also note that the property would require the wetlands notice that's found in the Sussex County Code, as well as the agricultural use protection notice that's found in the code. Based on the information that's within the materials in the project book and the other responses from the various agencies and the information presented this evening, the applicant would request that the Planning Commission approve this standard subdivision. And that concludes my presentation. Myself, Mr. Cromer, and Mr. Lober are certainly available to answer any questions members of the commission may have.
All right, sir. We thank you. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Hopkins.
So how do you know that all the lots will perk adequately?
Through the soil feasibility study. And the original study shows that breakdown. And then Coastal Soils went back out. They didn't test every lot when they went back out. They just did a number of random borings to make sure that that it was the same, and that their borings would still comply with the regulatory requirements.
And the force main that runs from Ellendale up to Georgetown, that's not an option to have basically a county sewer? That's the question.
The response that was received from Sussex County through the TAC process, the engineering comments, indicated that this is a level 3 area and that it was within the requirements, but that there was not sewer available to the site. So that's what the engineering department responded.
Tier 3 area, you mean? Or
tier 3.
Yeah, not
three. I'm sorry, yes. Tier 3, yeah. Sorry. I said level 3, didn't I? Tier 3.
What does that mean? It's not zoned? Is it a zone?
No, well, I just didn't want to confuse state strategies. Everybody talks about levels 1, 2, 3, and 4 with tier right. threes, and the different tiers have to do with sewers available, sewers coming, but who knows when, and sewers never coming. Yeah. That's kind of the 1, 2, 3, 4 levels. So, and level 3 means it's not there now or anytime soon.
Three is the one he said where it's coming, but nobody knows when. Yeah, that's right. Essentially.
I don't have any other questions. Thanks.
I did just have a couple questions. My first would be, since the buffer waiver would have to be required for lot 6, there's only one entrance going in there. Is there any way we could make that cul-de-sac an emergency entrance / exit to have a backup plan instead of only having one way in, one way out? Maybe that's a question for the owner.
I think we'd have to speak with the owner. I think part of the difficulty with that is keeping the 3/4 acre lot size for those lots. But in addition, these forested wetlands, and I know and Mr. Cromer can correct me if I'm wrong, but at least on this one, the western portion, I believe that is almost where the wetlands cross under the road. It's a wet area there, so I'm not sure that there would be the ability to do that. And this gets very close on this side, of course, as we mentioned at the outset, you're very close to Route 113.
I was going to say that the other side would certainly be able to accommodate an emergency entrance / exit.
So, but certainly through the design, they can look to see if there is an available location. And I assume that you're referring to a grass area that doesn't have to,
right.
Basically
just
designated.
Something that they could, emergency vehicles could mm-hmm. use if they had to. And the other question I had was from the 2005 report from DENREC. There's a comment in here that says a 50-foot setback would be required from all catch basins and stormwater management ditches, ponds, which are designed to carry or hold surface waters. Is that even going to be possible from an engineering standpoint?
I'll let our engineer answer that question if he would like to.
Sure.
If you could introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. Good evening. My name is Jim Lober. I'm with Mott McDonald. I believe that there's plenty of room for the 50-foot spacing around the sediment and stormwater BMPs. They're going to be you know, sort of large open infiltration type facilities, that, and with the large lots, there's going to be plenty of green space for that.
You're going to have catch basins in the road, I'm assuming, though, or near the road.
Well, to be honest, at the moment, we're hoping for an open drainage system. We're not hoping to put in any pipes and catch basins to put things into the roadside swales.
Okay.
And I'm not specifically familiar with that requirement back from 2005, but I can't imagine they actually meant a 50-foot buffer around every catch basin. So I would have to look into the details of that.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's not what they meant, but, or maybe it's changed.
Yeah, each catch basin that ran through the road, that would be a little crazy, for lack of a better term. So I think they were probably referring to the larger facilities at the end of the drainage runs.
Okay. I think that's my only couple questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mears.
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Whitehouse.
None for me, thank you.
Counselor?
None for me, thanks.
Okay. All right, Mr. Hutt. If you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2021-29 Deer Creek? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2021-29? All right, sir, right there, you come on up. Yeah, yep, you come on up.
You want to go first? No, I was actually thinking Mr. Lee should help concern, but I don't know if you
Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Ken Girardi. I live at 16934 Statenville Road, on the right up the road from this proposed subdivision. And I have visited each almost every house from 113 up to Union Church Road, and showed them the sign that was put down there where the subdivision will go. And most people had not seen it, so they were surprised about the subdivision. And our main concern with everybody was with the traffic flow. I mean, we figure 79 houses, that could go all the way up to 300 more vehicles, you know, 300 people. Just, and our road now is fairly quiet, but you get people, you know, zooming up and down through there. And it's a lot harder to walk and ride bicycles now on that road. And with this extra amount of people, it would get a lot more difficult. And I know you mentioned, of course, there's hunting across the street there and around there for residents that would build houses there. And there's chicken houses that the smell comes from once in a while when they're cleaning them out or whatever in the area.
Smells like money, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't mind it.
No, don't mind money.
So I know, I hate to say, you know, more people, more crime maybe. You know, hopefully you get good neighbors, but that's not always the thing we get. And that was our main concern that I have, that I came across, was the traffic, all the traffic that would be created. Because I know right now it's pretty hard to get out on 113 once, you know, not all the time, but in certain times of the year, and especially right now. And I think that's about all I have.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Who's next? All right. Sir. Yes, sir.
I got elected.
Okay. Congratulations. I did
too. My name is Shirley Leach. I live at 16967 Statenville Road. I'd like to read something from the Office of State Planning Coordination that was sent in response to the information they were sent. I promise it's not long. It's about a 107, page 107 in your packet.
Okay.
This project represents a major land development that will result in approximately 79 residential units in an investment level 4 area, according to the 2020 strategies for state policies and spending. This project is also located within a low density area, according to the Sussex County certified plan. Investment level 4 indicates where state investments will support agricultural preservation, natural resource protection, and the continuation of the rural nature of these areas. New development activities and suburban development are not supported in investment level 4. These areas are comprised of prime agricultural lands and environmentally sensitive wetlands and wildlife habitats, which should be, and in many cases are, preserved. From a fiscal responsibility perspective, development of this site is likewise inappropriate. The cost of providing services to development in rural areas is an inefficient and wasteful use of the state's fiscal resources. Over the long term, the unseen negative ramifications of development will become even more evident as the community matures and the cost of maintaining infrastructure and providing services increases. Additionally, it goes on to say that there's a federally threatened plant that occurs upstream and downstream of this site, and it's projected to be within this site as well. Additionally, there are species that are listed as State of Delaware rare, threatened, or endangered species that have been documented in this project area. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, sir. Come on up.
Hi. My name is Paul Leach, 16967 Statenville Road. Mm-hmm. I have a major concern as far as fire suppression. We have 80 homes in close proximity, or 79, and I didn't hear one word about fire suppression. If there's a fire, where are they going to draw water from? There's no fire hydrants in the area. There's no water supplies in the area. What are we doing for fire suppression? To me, that's a major concern.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right, who's next? Yes, sir. Come on.
Hello, my name is William McBain. I'm from 20031 McBain Lane. My wife, Anna Marie, and I own the property just to the west of this. It's a 50-acre total. It's actually a mini subdivision approved under pre-93 rules. It's a three-lot subdivision, the smallest lot of which is approximately 5 acres. We have one house on that property. That property was originally bought with the intent of raising a family. And I think I've done a good job. I got 6 kids, so it's done a good job for me. So I went through and looked and went point by point with the Chapter 99C compliance, and I've got some concerns. First of all, I guess I should back up and say, let it go in the record that I'm vehemently opposed to the subdivision. Okay. Like I said, I went over the point, it says the proposed density yield for Deer Creek is in character with existing subdivisions and other residential community in the vicinity. Like I said, my house is on a 27-acre parcel. That's a far cry from one unit per 3/4 acre. One of the things, I was actually here to speak in 2005 when Mr. Carlisle and Jimmy Lee approached the council for the subdivision. Honestly, I wasn't as opposed to it then. I've always believed that a man's right to build his property out is important. He's got blood, sweat, and tears in his property. He deserves it. Now it's been sold. The intent and purpose of the new purchaser, I don't believe, has the same merits as the original farmer who gave his blood, sweat, and tears towards it. That's just my feeling over it. One of the other things that was mentioned in the original application was that there were going to be 1,200 square foot houses put on these lots. And 3/4 acre doesn't give you a lot of room to put much more than 1,200 square foot. At the time, Ruth Ann Minner, the late Ruth Ann Minner, was the governor, and there was a directive that there be affordable housing, throughout the state. And I think this was one of the sites that was chosen at that time to try to meet those obligations. But honestly, my feeling is this subdivision just doesn't fit. My concern, is more probably directed not just the side of it where it doesn't fit from a financial standpoint, but from a wildlife standpoint. I hunt and fish and shoot on the property. I've got neighbors that hunt and shoot on the overview map. If you look to the north, that property is owned by Ben Jones and Skip Jones. It's the wooded parcel. You'll see there's deer plots that have been cut into the parcel. It's the wooded section. There's four to the left. you can zoom back out. Yeah, see, you can see the four plots. He deer hunts actively there. He manages deer herd. You know, we kind of hold the same theory on our property. We try to do what we can to manage the deer herd and try to have good trophy class deer that are in there. So, in reference to that, my observation owning it since 93 is that the deer move between his properties and south to the Apanzler property. If you'll scroll down, the state of Delaware owns approximately 200 acres on both sides of the highway. It's called the Apanzler plot. That is open for public hunting. There are some restrictions to it, but generally most upland wildlife can be hunted in that area. The point I'd like to make is, if you take all of the ag land preservation land, and I've got maps of it that I'll give to you guys, and you look it up yourselves. But there's over 1,000 acres north of this attached contiguously to that property that goes to the Apanzler plot. If that is developed, you've cut off the flow for wildlife to be able to even move. That's turkey and deer, you know, that generally migrate, you know, in that area. What you're basically doing, if there's also maps where Ellendale is his plan for you know, their future statistical plans, strategy plans. I'm sorry to move, and they've actually you can see plans for a subdivision just to the south. They've annexed almost all the way up to Fleetown Road. Again, I make the same point that you're going to create an island for that wildlife in that section. There will be no movement for them through wooded parcels to be able to, you know, to navigate north and south to get to that parcel. I don't think I know I read you know, a lot of the study, and Denrek was brought into it. But I think at times, you know, there's no voice for the animals, for the wildlife. And honestly, today, there probably aren't as many that hunt and fish and enjoy that lifestyle. But that is, yeah, that's a point I'd like to make with it. I just don't think it fits. After the 2005 application, I actually wrote a letter to Mr. Carlisle and asked him to consider 5-acre parcels. If he was going to do anything to break it down into 5-acre parcels and offer a new product for Sussex County, farmettes, something that wouldn't impact the roads, something that wouldn't impact the environment, something that would keep that in similar, you know, ag or you know, we're more rural setting than what you would have if you're putting 79 houses in there. It just doesn't fit. I think that's a point I want to make. Now, whether we're at a point now that, you know, we feel like that, you know, we can turn this ship around, I don't know, but I don't feel like the product that we're being asked to consider, you know, fits. One of the other concerns too, and has been brought up, but DelDOT has already laid plans for a grade separated intersection at 113. In other words, it would be an overpass. That overpass requires a lot of earth moving, raised elevation, again, changing the characteristics of the land, changing the way the wildlife would move through the parcel. I can give you the maps for it, but you know, they've laid those out as plans. They're calling it option 5. I don't recall seeing the other options. I did hear that the 05, there was consideration actually cutting off access to 113 on that end. Honestly, we've had the intersection just got changed. We had so many accidents there, and you know, several of us had called several times about the issues with the crossing. They're basically side impact accidents. So what they did was they changed the traffic flow, so you would have to go southbound, turn in a median to go north. And since then, we've seen less traffic, I think, on our road, which, you know, as my neighbor was explaining, I think that, as you know, we appreciate that more, that it's less traffic. And I know from talking to police officers, a lot of that traffic that we were getting through there was from the Cedar Village area to cover their crossroads. It was drug traffic. So again, you know, the situation the way it is today, you know, is more desirable than I think we would have if you're going to build an overpass and basically create a thoroughfare through that section. So I think that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir, over here on the end.
Good evening. My name is Jeffrey Foster. I live at 17025 Statenville Road. I believe it was just myself and my neighbor, Mrs. Walls, who lives directly across the street, were the only two that got a notice in the mail that this project was going on. I did see the sign down at the farm field, and I began letting people know, and apparently nobody noticed it. You know, so I think a better job needs to be done in order to let people know what's going on. Anyway, we've been living here since 1989. We moved down from Westchester, New York. My children were very young. It's been a very great life there. We were able to build a brand new home, something that we couldn't afford up in New York. And it is a Doppler radar ball. And we actually watched that being built as I was teaching my sons how to ride bikes around that farmland there. They called it the soccer ball, the big soccer ball that was being built. So it's been very nice there. And I think that when they closed the road, it's been a little bit of a pain to have to go down and make a U-turn and come back because you have to wait for traffic both ways, but it has cut down on the traffic. So that is a concern. The traffic is going to be there with 79 homes. The other concern is the wetlands. I live right there next to the wetlands. I know that during the rainy season, that water in that stream is and that pond is up pretty close to the road. So I don't know, I don't see a retention pond in this building site. I know a lot of developments that they're putting in now have retention ponds, someplace for that water to go. Where is that water?
There are no ponds in the back of the property.
It is in the back? So that's where it's going to go.
See them?
Okay, they're retention ponds. Okay, my concern was that it would be going down towards that pond and stream, and during the rainy season it would be more than it could handle, I'm sure, because I've seen it pretty high. How are we going to, since we were the only two that were notified for whatever reason, because we were within 200 feet, what was the reason for it? I mean, were our properties going to be affected in some way, or is that just the rule of thumb?
It's the rule of the county regulations that govern advertising, and if you just give us a second, I'll allow our director.
Okay, well, I got to, you can answer these if you want afterwards.
Well, how about if I do this one now, okay?
Fine.
Would you just review the advertising rules?
Sure. With major subdivisions, the rules are the same regardless of the size of the subdivision. All properties within 200 feet of the outer perimeter of this parcel received or were sent a notice. And we keep a copy of where they were sent and the addresses that they were sent to. And any that are returned back as undelivered, we keep on the file also. But we also display a newspaper notice at a minimum 15 days ahead of the application. It's actually displayed at least 3 weeks because of the way we process that. In addition to the on-site posting itself, it also appears on the county's website, it appears on the county notice board. Many newspapers often pick that up. So it is, then there's a list of where we sent all the postcard notifications, but they're sent within 200 feet of the outer boundary of the site.
So. Well, I didn't know there was more to that than like maybe we were going to be affected in some way with the construction, because I know they had talked about changing the road frontage and changing the entrance. We read a lot of things that were online about that, so we weren't really sure.
Okay.
I guess the other thing is, I guess, you know, there's been a lot of chicken houses that have been built around our area, and I guess there's been a lot of people that have been concerned about the nitrates and the nitrate levels getting into the water table, because I believe probably most of our wells, or most of my neighbor's wells, are probably about as deep as mine, between 48 and 52 feet. So in time, I know that's not an issue that you're discussing now, but with all those septic systems, 79 separate septic systems in there, is that going to have an effect on our water in years to come? That's a concern. So that's all I have to say.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, who's next? Okay.
It's
one trip to a customer, sir. I'm sorry. Attorney mentioned that in our rules review, so that would be somebody else. I'm happy to have someone. Yeah, come on.
My name is Mr. Peters, and I would be one of the property boundary owners on the opposite side of the large stormwater management pond. I've got about plus or minus 7 acres there. And having spent considerable time in the construction industry in an environmentally sensitive occupation, I have a pretty realistic view. I've always treated my property kind of as a little refuge that I've tried to protect. There's some northern Atlantic white cedars that grow out of that swamp. It is swamp. It's swamp all the way around, especially in the back and across my property and coming down. It feeds up into Hudson Pond. So I guess my big concern would be with that stormwater management, and I hear 50 feet, and I having walked where the average person would not walk because I am a hunter and a fisherman, I'm kind of not seeing how that's going to work and how there's not going to be an environmental impact, especially on my property. That would be my concern to you. I don't know, I just, you know, having been born and raised in Rehoboth Beach and watched all this development, you almost wonder when does it stop? Where does it stop? That's how I feel. I just, you know, wanted to come here and get that out. And I'll leave it at that, and thank you for your time.
Oh, indeed. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being here. Okay, who's next? All the way in back. Okay.
My name is Anna Marie McBain. I'm the wife of Bill McBain, and two oldest children are here. Purchased the property a few years before we got married. Been married for 26 years, and from Mr. Wilson and Alvin Wilson. He actually owned our property and the 100-acre piece across from us, which Mr. Howard owns. We enjoy our property, hunting and fishing, the children. The children have even had permission from Richard Carlisle many times to fish his little pond there, which is right across from our land, along probably around lots 9, 11 or so. I do have concerns for lack of improvement on our current roadway. If you ride down our road, for some reason the state decided to dig our ditches deeper. All the mailboxes along the road are leaning into the ditch. Sometimes they fill up with water, the mailboxes fall over. You go down there now, all the mailboxes are leaning on the road, especially if you go like eastbound, because that's where all the mailboxes are. We recently had crime helicopters fly over our houses two times in the same day during broad daylight, looking for a gentleman that came through Jerry Howard's from Royal Farms, and I'm not sure if they even found them. Statensville Road is a main thoroughfare for drug users delivering drugs. Further down west, you'll see people along the road. I've witnessed drug exchanges along our road, closer to Union Church Road. It's a very big concern. After we moved into our home, the state police were actually up in our attic looking for drug users. It's just, we would prefer not to have this high density development so close to our homes. And, you know, I know that there's an increase of the population into our area. You know, it's I was born and raised in Milford. Actually, my parents' home was removed to build the overpass there by Hertrick, so I'm familiar with all of this, but I would really love to protect our heritage here and for all of the folks here. If you drive down Satansville Road, through Satansville Road, all the way to Greenwood, to Harrington, it's all farmettes. All of the homes along Satansville Road, acre or more, farmettes, more, you know, small farms. It just doesn't fit in our area. I know that it may fit in your eyes because it's right along 113, but there are a lot of wetlands. We would like to see a larger buffer, if anything, if you do change it to a farmette kind of area. I don't see it fitting. Also, there's a big concern, if you can bring up the lots again. Between the main entrance and Mr. Foster's, where 5 and 6 is, there is a, I don't know, like a spillway, a ditch or what have you. Like Mr. Foster said, when it rains, that water level is up to the road. So that would have to be improved, major improvements, around 3, 4, or 5. Our area is right along, you know, 15 all the way down to, you know, probably 7, because Mr. Foster's would be around 6. There's a lot of wetlands there. It gets, but so I just don't see that working. Okay. If you walk through there. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Anyone else? Going once. Twice. Okay, just in time.
My name is Marjorie McBain, and I live at 16946 Statenville Road. I live probably 0.2 to 0.3 miles up the road from where this project is, and my concerns are environmental, 79 septics, and, you know, the wildlife inability to move back and forth. And in, like others have said, it just does not fit in our area. The traffic will be horrible, and I just don't see it being good for our area.
Okay.
Like the little farmettes, fine, because you would be fewer people and nice areas and the wildlife could still travel back and forth, but you know, not for our area.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Over here.
Hi, my name is Cindy Blimley.
Pull that down.
Okay. My name is Cindy Blimley. We live at 10786 DuPont Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
So our land backs up to like where 26 and 27 is.
Okay.
And we kind of bought the land so that we would be close to the hunting areas. We're hunters and fishers as well. You know, the wildlife kind of goes through our backyard. We have a lot of that is wooded. There is a big creek that goes back there, and it's muddy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how anybody could even, we can't even walk back in there because it's so bad. But we didn't get a whole lot of notice on this either. We just got a little postcard in the mail. So that's why we're here. I'm surprised to see that they're gonna put 79 homes back there, which is, to me, is a lot in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to really impact the traffic on Statenville Road, which I don't think is going to be able to handle that traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm opposed to this.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Okay. If there's no one else in the room, we'll go to the online folks if there's anyone there. I just want to make sure you understand that your time is done. Okay, so I'm going to ask one more time. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to speak? Okay, thank you. Operator, is there anyone standing by who would like to speak in favor of or in opposition to subdivision 2021-29 Deer Creek?
If there is anyone on the line in favor of or in opposition to this application, please dial 5-star. We have Ashley on the line. Ashley, your line is open.
Hi, my name is Ashley. I'm an employee with Sussex County just passing the line.
Thank you very much, Ashley. We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have to do that every time just to make sure we have connection. Okay, operator, is there anyone else available wish to speak?
At this time, there is currently no one else on the line.
All right, thank you. Commissioners, any further questions, comments? Okay, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Thank you. Our next public hearing is conditional use number 2300, MRBP LLC.
Thank you. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a